This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Welcome to the Press Gallery, the Edmonton Journal's politics podcast. I'm not your host, Emma Graney. I'm Dave Breckenridge, and I'm doing my best to fill in as Emma is out gallivanting about the globe. But fear not, folks, I've assembled a murderer's row of talent for today's episode. It's episode 290, the No Amnesty from Kenny edition. Today we have Claire Clancy appearing in her final episode of the Press Gallery as she is also heading off to gallivant about the globe.
Claire, how are you doing? Hello, I'm good. I feel like anyone who subs for Emma should do an Australian accent the whole time.
I can do a Scottish accent, yeah. And that's about it.
That's close.
Also sitting next to me, education reporter Janet French. How are you doing?
G'day.
There you go. You can do the Australian accent.
No, exactly. No, I can only do British because I'm really British. I'm not Australian.
Right. All right then. And all the way from Calgary through the magic of technology, Calgary Herald columnist Chris Varco. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I am not gallivanting anywhere.
And neither am I. I get, you know, my knees get sore if I do any gallivanting. Frolicking is a stretch. Got a lot to talk about. It's been a busy week in Alberta politics, despite the fact that we're right now in the midst of a federal election campaign. Jason Kenney was busy this week. I will touch first on the war of words, some very arcane or big words as well from the premier that he had with Amnesty International. We'll touch briefly on the fact that, hey, the legislature is going to sit earlier than we expected. We got a couple other things we might get to, and of course our regular segment, Good Stuff from the Gallery. But first, let's talk a war of words. You know, you don't want to come unarmed to a war of words. Jason Kenney came really armed to his war of words.
Like the biggest thesaurus ever.
The biggest thesaurus ever. So, you know, as some people may know, listeners to the show, Alberta is conducting an inquiry into anti-oil, foreign-funded anti-oil campaigns. Amnesty International doesn't like that. So,
no.
Jana, what can you tell me about the Amnesty International angle on this?
Yeah, well, a little earlier this week, I believe, he announced that there would be mechanisms by which the person running the inquiry could subpoena witnesses and call evidence to have a look into this foreign interference, what they say is foreign interference in the reputation of Alberta's oil industry. And so there was some concern among, I think probably among environmentalists and people who are in the activist community that there could be some targeting of people just for basically speaking their minds about their concerns about the environment. And so Amnesty International, which does some work highlighting human rights violations around the globe, wrote a letter saying, basically calling on Kenney to abandon the fight back strategy. And it says, Alex Neave in his letter says things like, ensure that any initiatives to promote the oil and gas industry in Alberta are fully consistent with Alberta's international human rights obligations and the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And basically make sure that Jason Kenney upholds any rights to freedom of expression, freedom of association, and peaceful protests, and making sure that they sort of prosecute or crack down on anyone making inflammatory statements or targeting people who are, you know, expressing their freedom of expression to criticize oil sands activity in Alberta. And he seems particularly concerned about the rights of Indigenous people and women and perhaps people who are non-binary. He keeps referring to people of all genders.
And it also related within the fight back strategy too to the $30 million energy war room that Kenney announced many months ago, just talking about, you know, how can they prevent basically criticism against oil and gas industry. So the public inquiry itself and then that energy war room, I think, were the two things that Amnesty has voiced a lot of opposition to.
And part of this also was a website that the government had set up to allow people to submit information. What kind of information were they looking for through this website?
Yeah, what's interesting is they set up a website, albertainquiry.ca, which allowed anyone in Alberta to submit. It was a very kind of broad description that the government said. It was anything that you think might be relevant to a public inquiry into anti-oil and gas environmental campaigns. Obviously, that's not exactly the language they used, but it means that potentially, are you looking for academics? Are you looking for advocates? Are you looking for oil and gas industry reps to submit random criticisms? Like, it's very vague, to the point that I think when you have something like a public inquiry, asking the public for feedback when this is such a contentious issue could, you know, lead to, obviously has led Amnesty to think this is problematic.
Let's break down what the inquiry is actually looking into. I know everyone has turned it into a report on Albertan activities hashtag on social media, and there's a lot of people having fun with it. Even I cracked a joke. Someone was complaining about a pickup truck that was quadruple parked, and I said complaining about big trucks is definitely an Albertan activity. So it's fun on social media. Trust me. Go on Twitter. Check out the AB Ledge hashtag. It's a barrel of laughs. So Claire, what is the inquiry actually looking at?
Right. So the inquiry is split up into two phases. And the first phase is being described as a fact-finding phase through a combination of interviews and research. And then the second phase is potentially going to be public hearings if necessary. And I think that's where people's kind of alarm bells went off, because the question is, what would a public hearing into anti-oil and gas campaigns look like? There's supposed to be a final report that's going to be made available to the public by July 2nd, 2020. But it's spurred critics, including people like the NDP, to ask, what is this a type of witch hunt?
No, this is anti-oil campaigns that are funded by certain groups, or what?
Yeah.
Like, what are they targeting here?
It's into any international campaigns that are supposedly targeting the province's energy industry. So yeah, you're right. Foreign funded campaigns. And I think the examples that have been given relate to the Tides Foundation, which we've heard brought up many times in different scrums with Kenny and media events. But, you know, going through this information, there's definitely a lot of I think there's maybe a lack of clarity about exactly what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Which leads to all of the chatter about alleged McCarthyism and things like that. So that brings us back to this week. Amnesty International tees off on the Alberta government and the inquiry and the website and the war room. And Jason Kenney took umbrage with that. Who wants to weigh in on the multi-hundred word letter that was sent?
I won't mind jumping in on this one.
How about her?
This is five pages of, as you said, a full-on sort of attack slash almost a parody of what you might expect a response to be normally to these kind of letters coming from Amnesty International. I think Jason Kenney, or whoever wrote this letter for him, really enjoyed the job that they were given here. You know, there's a couple of lines in here which are just classic. It said, you know, it can't be easy being the longtime head of Amnesty International Canada, stuck in an annoyingly free and peaceful Canada, having to work yourself up into high dungeon to denounce a democratically elected government peacefully standing up for its citizens. I mean, there's just a number of classic lines here. But basically, what the premier was doing was disassembling the whole idea that somehow you have to remind Albertans that they shouldn't violate human rights, or that they have human rights obligations, at the same time that there are many countries, in fact, most oil-producing countries around the world, don't have anywhere near those kind of standards. And he goes out to point out Russia, for instance, or what's going on in Venezuela or Saudi Arabia as well. So, I you know, in some ways, this letter and the timing of the letter from Amnesty International is perfect for Jason Kenney. It plays as a perfect foil for him to sort of stand up and defend he would see it as standing up to defend the energy industry, but also it sort of allows him to attack the enemies. And it comes right at the time of a federal election, and that probably can't be missed out as well. So it's definitely worth giving a read if you've got 25 minutes or whatever it takes to get through it all.
I think everyone should read definitely both letters because I think Amnesty also does raise a lot of critical questions. And I actually want to read one of the things they said in their letter, which I think is something that really stood out to me, is they said that they want to see the Alberta government ensure that public funds will not be used in any way that leads directly or indirectly to the harassment, surveillance, or criminalization of human rights defenders who oppose or criticize your government's energy agenda and its implications for the rights of Indigenous people and the global climate crisis. And I thought that was very, like a very kind of succinct wording of maybe what some of the concerns are, because potentially if this leads into a phase two where there are public hearings, would that lead to the harassment of people who have a different viewpoint?
And maybe not necessarily harassment by the authorities tasked with this, but harassment by the angry troll mob.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we know that the political discourse has been quite coarsened over the last few years, and there are people out there who see these instances as opportunities to take swings, both figuratively and in some cases physically, at people they see as opponents. Chris, I wanted to get your sense, though. Who was Jason Kenney speaking to with this letter? Was it really a letter directed at Amnesty? Obviously, he was responding to the letter from Amnesty, and I'm sure he took great joy in taking whacks at their argument. But was he actually speaking more broadly to Albertans or to his base or Canadians? Where does this kind of fit in the conversation around his government and this inquiry?
I think the answer is all of the above. I mean, it is a direct response to the letter from Amnesty International. But I think it's also a response to Albertans and to Canadians writ large that this government is going to stand up for the industry. And it really, he spends five pages going through all of these sort of point-by-point sort of counterpoints to the letter from Amnesty International. But as I said, I think this really is a bit of a perfect foil. You know, the whole incident is a perfect foil. It came up just before he went on stage up at the Oil Sands Show up in Fort McMurray. And I think at that time he referenced the fact that when he was in, I think it was high school, that he was involved or maybe even helped set up an Amnesty International chapter. So the timing of this coming just before a federal election, coming just as this public inquiry is getting going, is sort of perfect for him and his government, I think, in their view, to be able to say, look, you know, we're going to push back. I guess this is the kind of thing we should expect to see from the war room. That, you know, and I wonder whether this was the war room that actually wrote this letter or whether Jason Kenney stayed up for 4 hours to do this sometime in the last couple of nights.
Mm-hmm. But he never actually does address their concerns about human rights in all those words in his letter. He never does address the concerns about freedom of speech or potential targeting or documenting of people who consider themselves environmentalists.
And I think, what's interesting about the letter is that it goes back to this narrative that we've heard time and time again, saying, well, Canada is a very responsible oil producing country, and pointing out those examples, Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, Russia. And that's something that, you know, Jason Kenney, we've heard in speeches for years and years, like even when he was a federal minister. But yeah, Janet's right. What about the actual questions that were raised about what this inquiry could do, or what kind of challenges human rights activists who aren't on the side of the Alberta government are going to face?
Yeah, what protections are in place for people who are potentially compelled to be called as witnesses?
The Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and we do have freedom of association. We do have freedom of speech in this country, and you know, we hope that those are upheld. But the fact that we're having an inquiry isn't evidence of itself, in and of itself, that those rights are at risk.
Yeah, he makes that point. I mean, he does respond, but it's just a very quick, you know, response to it saying, you know, as for your concerns about freedom of expression, those rights aren't threatened. Our intent is to counter the misinformation and exaggerations out there. So I guess the question is, what is an exaggeration and a response to exaggeration versus what is a harassment or threatening people's freedom of speech? That's kind of the issue here that's at play.
I do want to touch on one other thing. You mentioned his speech up at the Oil Sands Conference where he addressed one other issue, but I want to jump ahead a second because we talk about the government and their inquiry and Jason Kenney being very busy this week. I think a lot of people had expected with a federal election campaign that the workings of the government of Alberta would kind of slow down a little bit. We received word just this morning that no break for you. The government House leader, Jason Nixon, has written to Speaker Nathan Cooper requesting that the government be reconvened like
October 8th,
2 weeks early.
Mm-hmm.
What could be the reason behind this, Claire?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Jason Kenney, as soon as he was elected, he said, we're going to be working all summer, passing legislation all summer. We saw a very intense summer session. There was a little bit of a reprieve, maybe. But honestly, there were still announcements constantly happening. And I really think that this just goes back to the UCP having this attitude of saying, we're going to push through as much as possible, as quickly as possible, make the changes we said we would do in our election platform. Obviously, you know, it's no secret that the Alberta provincial government will be supporting Scheer in his federal election bid. So I think maybe by convening 2 weeks early, we're going to be able to see, you know, maybe an opportunity to pass interesting legislation before a federal election that will probably suck up a lot of the energy post-October or like during that time and later. And I think, yeah, I mean, that's just a complete assumption on my part, but I'm assuming they're calling session because they have some legislation that they're interested in bringing in.
Did either of the two of you have any indication of things that didn't get done in the first go-round with this government that they're looking at getting done in the fall?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I would say actually no, because they did pass 13 bills, and that was, and it was really, really intense. And it was all the bills that they flagged as the most important ones to get passed early. So for example, repealing the carbon tax. We've talked about on the podcast before the legislation that we know for sure will come forward. But I don't think there's any massive piece of legislation that they missed that we're waiting on.
Janet, on the education file, is there anything that you think they could look at?
Well, yeah, we're expecting something on the Choice in Education Act, which was a very sort of nebulous, high-level promise or commitment in the UCP platform. And it just talks about legislation reinforcing the role of parents in their children's education and their rights, which is sort of spelled out in little different pieces of different federal and provincial legislation right now, but sounds like they want to formalize it. But I think there is some concern or curiosity about will this legislation actually have mechanisms to increase or bolster the number of private schools or the rights of private schools? You know, we've already seen regulations change to lift the cap on the number of charter schools and the ability of charter schools. So I think that's one thing to watch for. I just wonder if there's anything in the McKinnon report, though. Were there any suggestions in the McKinnon report that point to potential legislation that maybe we're not in the platform or that might be under contemplation now?
Chris, what do you think about that idea, that they may need to get some legislative ducks in a row to deal with some of the issues in the McKinnon report before the budget, which was supposed to come in late October? Also wondering if you think that it might mean we'll get a budget before the federal election.
I'd be amazed if we saw a budget, particularly if it's a budget with some bad news that comes before the federal election. It would just provide some ammunition for, I would think, Justin Trudeau and the Liberals, particularly in some of the tighter races in Alberta, not that there's a lot of them, but whatever there are, to say, look, this is what a Conservative government would do federally. Just take a look at what Jason Kenney is doing up in Alberta. So I would be amazed if there was any kind of move to introduce big chunks of the budget or actually release the entire budget prior to the federal election.
So why do you think they're coming back early then?
That's a very good question. I actually don't know whether they've got other legislative things that they've got to get ready or whether they want to clear the decks before the budget comes down sometime after the 21st. I know that they've talked about things like the Aboriginal Opportunities Corporation. They've got an AER review that might require some legislation as well. But I'd be really curious to know what is the legislation they want to introduce before the budget is introduced, and I can't give you that answer.
Does it have anything to do with labor, I wonder? I mean, that's sort of the big flashpoint right now.
Yeah. I guess we'll see. October 8th, the day after the English language federal leaders debate, the one that Justin Trudeau was participating in.
He didn't even look at his calendar. He just had that date like
October 7th.
In his head.
Well, because I talked about it on my other podcast day. You know, I'm just a font of information, folks. Speaking of the election, One of the big things that Justin Trudeau had tried to do in 2015 and also through his first term in office as prime minister is talk about the ability, but also the need to balance the environment with the economy. The federal government famously bought and is paying for the Trans Mountain Pipeline, but also brought in some bills that are controversial in Alberta, the Bill C-48, which is the tanker ban off northwest coast of BC, and Bill C-69, which changes a whole bunch of regulatory aspects of the process to get major infrastructure projects like pipelines approved. Jason Kenney announced this week that his government is launching a constitutional challenge of Bill C-69. Claire, kind of break down how that was announced.
Sure. Yeah. He made the announcement during a visit to Fort McMurray, where he was speaking at the oil sands trade show. Basically, this is not a surprise to anyone. Jason Kenney has talked at length about the fact that he would be making a constitutional challenge against Bill C-69, the Impact Assessment Act. And that federal piece of legislation, as Dave said, it overhauls the federal regulatory process for energy projects. So it would change things like timelines for project approval, what's required in terms of environmental assessments. And what's interesting is that this has been an unpopular piece of legislation in Alberta since it first came into the public consciousness because, former Premier Rachel Notley on the NDP side of the political spectrum also spoke in opposition to it. Where the two of them differed, though, was that Notley said that there was a way forward with Bill C-69, where she felt like if enough amendments to allow for Alberta projects to go forward were made, she would have been in support of Bill C-69, although she continued to speak out against it up until the election when she lost to Jason Kenney. In contrast, Kenney has been more vocal about saying, we completely disagree with it, although there have been times when he hasn't completely dismissed the idea of amendments making it possible for Alberta to support this federal legislation. But anyway, this constitutional challenge, not a surprise to anyone, and we'll see what happens. I think it obviously does speak to what the priorities are going to be during a federal election campaign.
What does he call it? The No More Pipelines?
The No More Pipelines Law.
Act, yeah.
The Act. No More Pipelines Act. So, Chris, do you think the timing of this, knowing a federal election was coming, is strategic on the part of the Alberta government to launch the challenge right as Canadians are going to the polls and keeping the pipeline issue in the national conversation? Or is it just a case of getting the challenge out there as soon as possible and the timing is just coincidental?
No, this is pretty much all about politics. The act was proclaimed. The government has said that they were going to do this for months, basically since even they were elected, they would say this was going to take place. We've got an election being called. We've got the federal natural resources minister who is behind or partly behind the Bill C-69, Amarjit Sohi up in Edmonton, who's obviously trying to win re-election. I think this is pretty much all about the politics. Now, the arguments themselves will take months and maybe years to play out. I mean, we're talking about jurisdictional and constitutional issues. Where do the rights of the province for resource development begin and end versus where do the federal government's rights over environmental regulations and energy developments as it relates to pipelines that go across the border begin and end? So these are really complex issues, but we're not going to have any resolution on this for months or, as I say, years. But the politics of it is immediate.
So what is the argument that the government is making that Bill C-69 steps on Alberta's constitutional jurisdiction over energy, correct?
And I think the argument the Alberta government continues to make and that Rachel Notley made as well is that Bill C-69 would effectively prevent Alberta from being able to approve any new large energy projects and pipelines, and that what happens in a province in terms of those approvals, you're right, is provincial jurisdiction. Although the Constitution does seem to side with the federal government on that in terms of the fact that it's a federal resource, although obviously that will be decided in court.
And how have the federal Liberals responded to this?
Federal Natural Resources Minister Amarjeet Sohi, who represents a riding in Southeast Edmonton, obviously, he's actually not a minister right now. He's a Liberal candidate in Southeast Edmonton, isn't he? Right, we've got to use our election words.
Yeah,
right.
Back to that.
Don't call anybody prime minister. There is no prime minister.
Yeah.
He did respond to Kenny and just said, like, look, I'm pretty confident that when we did write this bill, given all the issues we've had with federal approvals of energy projects, that we're quite confident that this bill pertains specifically to federal issues. So he sounded pretty confident about it. I think it's also really interesting that Saskatchewan yesterday applied for intervener status in support of Alberta's case.
Go Saskatchewan.
Here's what Don Morgan said, my old pal from Saskatchewan. He's the attorney general there. He says, it's important and absolutely imperative for us that we stick up for where the rights of the province and are in the ability to regulate business and regulate industry in our province. He's very concerned about Saskatchewan's vibrant oil and gas industry.
I mean, no disrespect to Saskatchewan, as we are all equal partners in Confederation, but it's kind of like when the little sibling is standing up for the big sibling
yeah.
when they're in trouble with the parents.
But I think that the province is, like, there's more than just one province that is interested in this case, and I'd be amazed if there's not multiple provinces joining this dispute. I mean, there's obviously the politics of the day that are going on here, and it's, you know, no coincidence that the conservative premiers here are the ones trying to pick a fight with the federal liberals. But I think there are bigger jurisdictional issues here that I think other provinces, like, I'd be amazed if Quebec at some point doesn't get involved in this litigation as well. These are cases that the Supreme Court are going to have to decide, where do the rights of the federal government begin and end, and where do the province's rights, which include the rights for resource development in the country, begin or end. These are pretty big fundamental issues.
And thus goes the Canadian circle of life. We'll be debating, you know, provincial, federal, jurisdictional issues, I think, until we're all well dead.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so now we're going to jump to our regular segment on here, Good Stuff from the Gallery, wherein we tell you how you should spend your free time. Basically, yeah, it's anything we recommend, things that we've seen or read or heard about. Janet, why don't you start us off?
I would recommend that you quit your job and travel the world and just burn it all down,
yeah.
Leave it behind.
Yeah,
but that's not my ability. I don't have the ability to do that. Anyway, or you could just read this great article that ran in the Washington Post, which is actually written by an independent news outlet I'd never heard of called Kaiser Health News. They did a really fantastic, they did some great journalism here, deep dig into the UVA health system in Virginia. And, well, why should you care? Because we're all having these conversations right now about private healthcare versus public healthcare. And what they were able to very systematically and methodically prove was that this actually publicly funded health system in Virginia was running a very, very aggressive campaign to recoup any unpaid medical bills. And it was responsible directly or indirectly for divorces, house foreclosures. People had liens placed on their property. If they were employees of this health system or other public entities, they had their workplace checks garnished. It's just a really fantastic piece of journalism.
Chris, do you have anything for us?
Well, I was going to mention a New York Times article that I read yesterday on the history of grifting and basically con artists, which is interesting. But instead, I'm going to choose some recordings that I'm listening to right now, the complete Galaxy recordings of classic alto saxophonist Art Pepper. If you're looking to hear 18 hours of fantastic music, and that literally is how much time there is, 137 songs, I'd highly recommend it.
Amazing.
We're awesome. Trying not to laugh.
That sounds amazing.
It's fantastic. So if you're looking for something to listen cool. to evening, late in the evening, that is where I would go.
All right. I'm going to recommend a podcast. It's ESPN 30 for 30 podcast. Season 5 is all about Donald Sterling. It's called The Sterling Affairs. It's about the former owner of the Los Angeles Clippers. He came to notoriety, I think, for many reasons through the league, but I think he broke through to national consciousness when an audio tape of him berating his mistress for hanging out with black men, including Magic Johnson, and bringing them to the LA Clippers games, it kind of sent shockwaves through the league. The series deals with His rise to prominence as an NBA owner, some of his issues as a real estate developer and landlord, and concerns about racism and how he practiced that business and how that may have carried over into how he ran the Clippers. I'm on episode 405 right now. It's a fascinating listen about race and money and power in sport. It's a great series. Claire, you get the last word.
Yeah, bring it home. Last word. I'm going to recommend my favorite podcast, which is Ear Hustle.
I thought this was your favorite podcast.
And yeah,
her
it
second
is,
favorite
definitely.
Podcast.
Ear Hustle is my favorite podcast. I've recommended it a couple of times, but it's such a great listen. And it's something I listen to all the time. It's a pick-me-up. It's so interesting. It takes place in San Quentin Prison in the U.S. And it's made by prisoners inside the walls. And it's all about their lives. But I would recommend that. And I just do want to say thank you to everyone for the kind words in the last week about my departure. I said goodbye to Emma on the podcast last week, and it was a really hard decision to leave the Journal. There are so many amazing journalists who work here and do such incredible work, you know, despite a lot of pushback that we continue to get in our daily jobs, like all journalists around the world. So I just want to say continue to support the Journal and all the amazing reporters and editors. And I can't thank everybody enough for the last 3 years because it's been an incredible experience.
Well, we know you're going to be missed in the newsroom. Listeners of the podcast will definitely miss hearing you and your insights every week. So thank you for your work the last 3 years. You know, we will be down one next week. We'll be missing Claire greatly, but don't forget to tune in next week for more political news on the Press Gallery.